The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Imagine uncovering the secrets that others missed. A hidden clue, a silent witness, a twist that changes everything. I'm Carter Roy, host of Murder True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Join me every Tuesday as we dive into a famous solved or unsolved murder case. Follow and listen to Murder True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios. Available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here on the morning shift in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. The guys were giving grades to the Falcons wide receivers and the Falcons quarterbacks for this season. So you can do the same thing. Give us a shout out, 404-726-0929. Or maybe you have thoughts on who won which one Wednesday.
Yeah. There's
no thoughts. It's me.
Our buddy Ed was like, you know, there's only one reason that he continues to pick Bo, and it's he knows, you know, the management status thing going on in here. So that's fine.
Mike. That's really
obtuse.
You sounded
hurt, Dylan. You sounded really hurt.
Because there, it's clear that, Mike, there was a couple of times you just straight up pretty much agree with Bo. Your first one, you said you pretty much knew you were going to get dinged by me. And then, you know, I'm going to be honest.
Because I didn't pick the Falcons to win the South.
Yes, I'm going to agree.
I went about my MVP argument from a completely different angle just so you couldn't say this right now.
But still, though, it came back to it being Josh Allen. I respect that you coming out with a different angle, but
who goes first? I just have to.
No, it doesn't come down to who goes. No, it doesn't come down to that at all. I liked your argument, but okay. It's just Bo's
look,
a winner.
I'm not
man.
A sore loser. It is what it is.
Maybe I'll bounce
up
back
the plate
next week.
Next time and try to play better.
Yeah.
You know, you got to look in the mirror sometimes.
Got to take accountability, like Raheem Morris.
You've had a problem.
I guess
doing
I'll
that,
just
apparently.
Talk louder like Bo does. Anyways,
he took a shot at you.
You know, let him take shots. He's a loser.
He said that on the way out. I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to push this thing past the break time. I'm not even going to go in on this man.
You're right. No, that was
deserved.
You had a right to say that.
I mean, we only started the show by helping celebrate him being national champion.
Yeah. Oh my God. You don't get rings for being Which One Wednesday champ, although we should probably bring something back in terms of winning that.
I'd have a lot of them.
Never got anything. I never got any. No, I didn't.
Oh.
You never got anything. You're supposed to get Mio.
Yeah, I got Mio like 6 weeks after the fact.
Creamer.
But I did get it.
No, I was positive I did.
No.
Anyways.
Tragic.
Tragic.
Sounds so upset about it.
Yeah. Yesterday, when I was on my way home picking my kids up from daycare, my son got sick in my car. And I guess maybe the wake-up call needs to be for me, because I have no idea what to do with my truck at this point. Like, I got home. I was on daddy duty. My kids are inside. I'm, like, trying to clean as best I could, and I text Bo, and I was like, it's just straight up like I'm gonna have to trade it in. Like, there's no way, there's no two ways about this. When you have a mess in your truck like that, I was like, I gotta trade it in, or I'm gonna feel really bad, and I'm gonna probably end up taking some guy to like get the deep detail, like, you know, the $400 or $500 detail job where they're taking off like side panels and stuff, because there was nothing that could have been done with that. So I don't know where to go from there, but, man,
if
you're out there and you've ever had a sick kid in your car, I sent Bo a picture of it, and I go, hey, just prepping you for fatherhood, because this is what's on the way, buddy.
Disgusting.
This is not good. I think it's just I don't know where to go from there, man. It's just, I guess I need the wake-up call. I don't know what to do, but it is what it is.
All right, lines are – what were you going to say?
No, I'm good. I was gonna come at Mike, but I'm not gonna choose violence anymore. I've proven my point that I'm the winner on this show.
Okay.
All right. Let's go to Chris in College Park. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, everybody, and Happy New Year.
What's
Happy
up,
New
buddy?
Year. Hey, what's up, fearless leader?
Sir.
All American.
Sir.
And Mademoiselle Littfoot.
Oh, my goodness. Hello.
I'll never forget those Olympics, my friend.
I won't either.
I come with aggravation in my voice on this year, and I'll get right to it. Very disappointed in how we finished the game on Sunday and the season. So last year we had 7 wins with D. Riddy and Heinicke, and you mean to tell me with the $100 million quarterback and the 8th overall pick, Lefty Penix, we win one more game? We're under 500. We all thought that we would at least have a winning record, 10 wins, what it was, and thought we would get a playoff. So to see that happen is disappointing, and that, to me, goes to coaching. Coach Ra has been underneath the gun. People have had their opinion about him, and I've said it throughout the morning shift calls that you guys have let me be a part of, that certain games and certain things, the coach has to get the players to play and play to their abilities, and I just don't think that happened. And to lose that last game, as good as our offense looked, and knowing what was on the line, that falls on him.
Yeah.
And then I would hope that he takes a long look in the mirror and see what he could do better. I also think Terry Fontenot, drafting 4 offensive players as our number one draft pick over the last 4 years, has come back to bite us because our defense is lacking. And I know you guys have been talking about that. So for the life of me, and you've heard me say this, can we please take a defensive player with our first overall pick next year? And then lastly, back to coaching. I heard Ra, and I don't want to misquote him, but he was talking about like he's not responsible for what went on before him or the 80s or whatever, whatever that comment was. And again, I don't mean to misquote him. But I looked at Dan Campbell, and when he came into the Lions at the coaching job, he embraced their 40 years of misery, their long years of losing, and got in the basement in the muck with the fans and has raised that team. You got to understand that kind of stuff and put that and fortify that into your coaching. Just my own advice. And now this one's for you, Dylon,
because
I'm going full John Chuckery, and that's what's bugging Chris from College Park. Hashtag Quit Nation. Hashtag Quit Squad.
Appreciate the call, Chris.
I think he's spot on a couple different things, but I think the one thing that he hits the nail on the head is, and we've talked about this, there are 2 losses that will stick out this year to me, right? And it's Raheem. I thought Raheem was brought in because there were certain times last year in Arthur Smith's tenure, specifically in the stretch run, and I'm talking about December, the last game against the Saints, the game against the Panthers where, you know, you throw the pick. There were a number of times, the game against Chicago, where you were playing extremely inferior opponents and could not get your team to play up. I didn't feel that way about Raheem until the last game, other than one game, and that was against the Saints coming off their losing streak.
Well,
other than that, you lost to 6 playoff teams and the Seahawks, who won 10 games.
In the Saints game, I don't feel that way because the first half they came out and punched you in the mouth with that new coach energy, and then the second half you controlled that game. You missed 3 field goals. You missed 3 field goals, and it was that was the difference in the game. I want to say this about Raheem's comments on the history. He's not responsible for the last 50, 60 years of Falcons football. He's just not. You can say, yeah, well, he was here when Dan was here. Yeah, he was here, and he was in an assistant coach role, and he did his job for those positions. You know, he didn't make the calls in the Super Bowl. It's not like Raheem was going to go over there and tell Danny better do this or tell. Like, what do you guys – like, that's ridiculous. But the fact is that that's not a question to me that should have been asked at the time it was. You don't ask that question as you go in to a game where it's a must win and you get a chance to still make the playoffs. I think it's unfair to throw that on someone. You want to ask it at a press conference to close the season or to begin the season. That's fine. It's a little bit different, too, because Dan Campbell played in Detroit. People forget he was a player in Detroit. In fact, he was a player on the 0-16 Detroit team. So when we bring up the Dan Campbell thing, not to mention Dan Campbell's just a different dude. Like, he also was crucified by many people, even in this radio station, who now praise him for his opening press conference about biting kneecaps. Hell, I made fun of him. I'm not going to lie. I made fun of him. The guy was talking about biting kneecaps.
Fairness, you're not making fun of him. The comment's funny. It's funny as hell.
Well, and that's your opening.
It's hilarious. I loved it.
And you're in an organization, Tiff, that has been the ascent, you know, just losing for how many years? I don't want a playoff game since like the early 90s, and you're coming as like, yeah, I'm going to bite kneecaps.
There's another part of this conversation that frustrates me to no end. And if y'all remember correctly, Dan Campbell, a number of his decisions this year, clock management in the game stuff, were questioned. He got questioned for going for an onside kick with 10 minutes left in a game just 3 or 4 weeks ago.
He cost him a trip to the Super Bowl in the NFC Championship game last year with a fourth down call. He should have kicked a damn field goal and
exactly,
won the game.
Exactly. And the whole Dan Campbell, Raheem Morris conversation, guys, are we forgetting the fact that Dan Campbell's first year in Detroit was terrible?
Yes.
This guy started 0-10.
3-13-1, then they went 9-8 the next year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So don't I this whole thing where like Dan Campbell's this guy that gets his team to play up, this, that, and the other. Yes. But did he get more than one freaking year to do it? Yes.
Well, technically he got two.
You can't tell me there were not
three.
You can't tell me there were not Lions fans that wanted him fired at that point. I would say the vast majority wanted him fired because he's talking about biting kneecaps. They're being made fun of, and he starts. They didn't win any of their preseason games that year either, right? Which doesn't mean anything, but then you start going 0-10-1. So, like, this whole thing about Dan Campbell, we're going to act like that he's just, you know, that you know, we just knew from the beginning that Dan Campbell was the guy. It's just not true. Like, it's revisionist history to go back and talk about Dan Campbell and his tenure at Detroit. Get to me in 2 years and talk about
it. We're going
to
bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up, and then it's going to take 2 more shots to knock us down.
And also, look, I'm not saying Raheem's that guy. I'm not. I don't know that. But, man, you got to give it more time to marinate,
and
is my point.
He did get 12 games in Miami to be an interim coach. Now, it's just an interim, and I know Raheem had a full sling. But, yeah, look, the guy went 3-13-1, 9-8, then 12-5, and then 15-2. So they've only made the playoffs the second time in a 5-year span, or this is his fourth year. So I agree with what you're saying.
Let's go to Anthony in Covington. What's up, Anthony?
Good morning, guys. Good morning, good morning.
What's up,
Happy
buddy?
New Year to y'all. Happy to be back.
Yeah, same to you.
Hey, OP, hit me with that wham, wham, wham.
Wham, wham, wham. I love it, man.
All right. Well, I love to hear that everybody's obviously out of their feelings about the Falcon stuff already. I about to say normally it's like a 24-hour cool-off before we have knee-jerk reactions. So real quick, we're not going to fire Raheem. Get over it, okay? That's dumb, all right? Well, the Patriots did it. Yeah, Bob Kraft does a lot of shady stuff. Check the news articles, right? So, in regards to this, the biggest thing Raheem has to learn from this whole thing, it started off in the preseason when he's doing his media tour, right, with Ron Clark. He has a vast trust for his people and backing his people. I think the biggest thing Raheem learned is that he needs to make the decision quicker and understand when to step in and be like, you know what, I gave him a fair shot. We got to move on. I think that's the biggest thing we have to learn, especially from Kirk Cousins.
I think it's a phenomenal
trying
point.
Trying to get work his way out.
I think all that's a phenomenal point. Now this offseason, now's when you have to cut your teeth here, Raheem.
Back to those offseason grades when we returned here on the morning shift. You guys weighed in the receivers and quarterbacks. Out of the receivers, though, who's the MVP of the group? We'll discuss next when we return on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We've got 8.8 to go. Hawks trying to win their second game on this 6-game road trip. And now it's going to be put in play by Collier. And it's stolen by Dyson Daniels. Now they pick it up again. Sexton shoots a 3 and makes it with 2.9 to go. Hawks don't have time. Here's Trey. Midcourt fires. Bang! Trae Young just won the game. Trae Young just won the game, folks. Trae Young from midcourt. He just stunned the silent crowd here in Utah. Trae Young from midcourt just knocked down a 3, and the Hawks win. The Hawks win.
Steve Holman on the call of a Hawks win, and that's right, Trae Young hit the buzzer beater from beyond half court to give the Hawks a 124-121 win over the Utah Jazz last night.
It's just, again, I love it. Trey gets this, these other teams, these other cities look at him like he's a villain, and I love that, man. I love that he has just accepted that aspect of things, and he immediately waves bye to the crowd. Like, I love that attitude, man. And it's not, I don't love that in every player. I don't love that in every Atlanta athlete. I don't know what it is, but it's become endearing for me with Trae Young when he's in these situations and comes through in the clutch. that he waves by or does whatever he wants to do, the Knicks logo, everything else. He was clutch from beyond half court when he needed to be. He's not shooting well, and I think that makes me excited for the future of this team when Jalen gets back healthy and Trey's shot comes around. But, yeah, you can't ever feel down about a SportsCenter number one play last night when the Hawks needed a road win in a big way.
When it comes to him, I was thrown off by saying it, but when it comes to him and you talk about his attitude, like that's the thing I love with the opposing fans is he feeds off of it. I sometimes wonder if he's a better road player than he is a home player. And in the New York stuff, he became this little villain. I say little, I shouldn't say that, but this like villain type thing with the New York crowd. And he's not afraid to do it other places. It's not very often that Steve Holman is almost like speechless.
Yeah, because
you notice because he was like he hit it.
What just happened? I was looking down at my notes, getting ready for overtime.
Because how often is that? How often is that play? Oh, they hit it, game winning shot. Oh, you heave it down court, it misses, and let's go to overtime, folks. And now your team is deflated, and the home team has all of it. But no, Trey's like, no, let's walk off Trey tonight. Ice Trey, no, walk off Trey.
I love the fact too that Trey in his post game interview is like, you know, I knew that Colin Sexton was going to try to put on for, like, he wanted to beat the Hawks. He's an Atlanta kid. Obviously, he went to Alabama. I was a fan of his when he was in college, but he's the one that, like, he was the hero for 2 seconds. Like, Colin Sexton was the hero for 2 seconds. Busted play, tipped ball by Dyson Daniels. You just had a massive three from DeAndre Hunter just a minute before that. Colin Sexton hits that three. He's the hero for like 2 seconds. Hey, nice man. And inbounds the ball. Trey's got it. Game's over.
Sure, there's a lot of guys out there that can relate.
So are you going to be full of optimism for the next – wait a minute. Did I just miss – that just go over my head?
Mike said he's a hero.
Speaking
a
of
hero
which,
for two
let's,
seconds.
Let's, speaking
for
of which,
two
let's,
seconds, he was the hero.
Let's hand out some grades.
You're doing great, sweetie.
And I said
I missed all of that. I just said that
I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there that can relate to being a 2 second hero.
Okay, that's what you said. All right. All right. How about the Braves? No, I'm just kidding. How about them Falcons?
Well, no, I can't say that either.
I know. I was like,
Brian's just say, how about them Hawks?
How about them Hawks? All right.
His performance, A+.
Okay.
And I have destroyed the show at 8:26, 25.
We're off the rails.
You guys
this early, too early in January.
This morning at around 8:30, it's 8:26. I couldn't
contain myself any longer.
Oh my God. Go away. All right. So you guys are so horrible. You guys are horrible people.
Poor Amy.
All right. So, off-season grades. Or why do I keep saying off-season? Well, it is the off-season.
Season grades.
Season
We're
grades.
We're judging you by your season.
For, yes. You guys are judging people. I don't judge. I just wait and see.
We've waited and we've seen.
No better time to wait. No better time to wait and see than January 8th.
How much more do you need to wait and see, though, Tiff?
All right. We were talking earlier about the Falcons wide receivers. Drake London, Darnell Mooney, Kadarius Hodge. Ray Ray McCloud, you hand out your grades. Who would you say is the MVP of the receiver group?
I think this is probably gonna be different than Bo. I think it's Darnell Mooney. I think Drake has the numbers. Drake, they all had exceptional years. I mentioned this before though. What Darnell Mooney does for this team makes them way different than they have been in years past. Darnell Mooney's speed. His ability to get deep on routes very quickly and, you know, kind of not expose the safeties but stress the safeties has allowed Drake London to do what Drake London needs to be doing in an NFL offense. So the numbers are Drake London's, and you can point to that until we're blue in the face, and I'll understand it. But the MVP for what he's able to do, it's a lot like the conversation we just had about NFL MVP. Right? It's not always the best numbers. It's what do they do for their squad. Darnell Mooney is the MVP of this group.
Then by that logic, Derrick Henry's the NFL MVP. At least he's the MVP of the Ravens.
Well, he has Lamar Jackson on his team.
Yes, but you saw Lamar Jackson you've never seen before, and I wholeheartedly believe.
Derrick Henry helped too. You guys love that word, unlocked, but yes, I think Derrick Henry's impact on that team has been significant.
1,000% I believe that, because when the defense wasn't playing well, Who was taking over games? Derrick Henry. When Lamar was having, you know, and I don't want to use the word struggle, but early on in the season, Derrick Henry was doing these things that we were just like, Remember all the talk out of Dallas? The first 7 weeks of the season, the only thing we could talk about was how phenomenal Derrick Henry is and how Dallas didn't sign him, it felt like. And I'm talking about Nashville when you talk about the Ravens or the Cowboys. I don't disagree that the impact Darnell Mooney's had on this team. But for me, if you're talking about the receiving core as a whole, it is Drake London, because he has been the one consistent all year. You don't catch 100 passes. You don't have almost 1,300 yards. You don't have 9 touchdowns if you're not the guy. When they needed a play this season, the game was on the line. Who did he go to? It seemingly more times than not, it was Drake London. When you needed a first down, they didn't go to the tight end position. They went to Drake London to make tight end position type plays. The 7 yards when you need 6. The 9 when you need 8. The contested catches. It was Drake London. It seemingly over and over and over again. And it was great to see, because another pick that the fans didn't like, raised both my hands. I didn't want Drake London today. I wanted a different position, but that's what we got, and he was worth it, every bit of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I understand it. I just think Darnell Mooney was that dude for me.
A lot of W sauce. A lot of W sauce, baby. A lot of W sauce, and a lot of Owl Inn Lager, New Realm Brewing, the official beer of Kennesaw State Athletics.
Hoodoo!
That's right, Dylon.
That actually sounded like a recording, Dylon. That was pretty good.
You know what? You should just record yourself doing it, and you want to do it every time. Or you can do it live. I kind of prefer live.
I kind of like live, too.
But I want consistency, right, so Bill only O'Reilly. If you do it that good.
All right. We'll do it live!
I was pranked, y'all. I got pranked.
Are we still talking about the dresser?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No. I mean, I pranked myself on that.
So who pranked you?
Well, I probably about mid-November, I start receiving emails.
Oh, no.
Congratulations.
Oh, no.
On joining the Buffalo Bills email chain or something.
Oh,
I start
no.
getting all these Buffalo. Maybe that's why I think Josh Allen's the MVP. I don't know. But I'm getting all these updates on watch your Buffalo Bills play in the playoffs.
Oh, no.
Yeah, all this stuff. And I'm like, where the hell did this come from?
Oh, no.
So I don't know. And I'm just like, man, why am I getting these? And I just like, who would have my email that's a Buffalo Bills fan? Like, how would this happen? And so I'm kind of searching, and then I get one Sunday night. I'm sitting in misery. I hate the world Sunday night, right? You know, because we lose to the Panthers. Tampa Bay wins, so we're out of the playoffs no matter what. But still, just everything is coming to a realization that this is what our season was.
Yeah, you're stewing. It's
and
right.
I'm getting these stupid emails about watching my Buffalo Bills. They're not my Buffalo Bills. I'm a Falcons guy. I've been grew up in Atlanta. So then I sent a text to a buddy of mine in the neighborhood who also works. He's one of the higher-ups for Findlay Roofing, and he's a Buffalo native. So my buddy Adam, and I text him, and I go, hey, are you the meep, meep, meep that signed me up for Buffalo Bill emails? And he just wrote back. He's like, I don't know, maybe.
Oh,
and I
man.
Go, dude.
No, dude.
That's so dirty.
We can't be friends
it's
at that
so
point.
It's so dirty.
Like, I don't know how tight you. I don't know where he is ranking on your friends list, but he's way, way
and
down.
And look, there's a lot more pranks that could have been worse, but I'm not going to lie. I felt a certain way. And I held back because, like I said, he's up in Findlay, and that's a big sponsor of our station. They were a big sponsor of my golf tournament, the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic.
It only buys you a certain amount of patience.
But then I realized that I gave him my email so he could email me something about the golf tournament.
When did the first email come?
Like, no.
Probably like a week after the Brown Grass.
Oh, no, man. We can't be friends, dude.
I wasn't even thinking. I thought it was just like an error. And
you did too much, man.
Well,
you did too much.
Hey, when we come back here, we've got Chip Brown joining us from 247 Sports to discuss the Texas Longhorns preview their CFP matchup on Friday. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back here on the Morning Shift and going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find Texas Longhorns insider for 247 Sports. Chip Brown joining us here. Good morning, Chip.
What's going on? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It's good to have you back with us. So you got the matchup between Texas and Ohio State on Friday night. This is, should be a good one. What do you anticipate seeing from the Texas offense? This could be something where, you know, they've got to rack up the points if Ohio State is playing the way that they played in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, well, I think Texas fans are hoping that Quinn Ewers found something there at the end of the Arizona State game. 4th and 13, that's what it's known as now.
Wow.
Season on the line, came through with a 28-yard touchdown pass to Matthew Golden, then turns right around, throws a 25-yard dart for a touchdown in the second overtime, and then converts the two-point conversion. It's just mystifying what happens to this team in the third quarter. They outscored opponents through the first seven games in the third quarter, 69-3. Over the last seven games, they've been outscored in the third quarter, 60-16. They get up on teams, they play with their food, they let teams back into the game, and then somehow they figure it out. For all teams except Georgia. So it's been a strange trip here down the stretch, but. They've also got to figure out what's going on with their kicker, who went through a confidence crisis at the end of that Peach Bowl. And they got to get the running game going, and that's not going to be easy because Ohio State statistically is a better defense than Texas is. So, you know, everybody's picking Ohio State to win this game, which is probably right where Steve Sarkisian wants it. I'm told they've had a great week of practice, that they're pissed off, locked in. So hopefully we'll see a really, really good game on Friday night.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about, actually, was what is going on with them? You know, you said you mentioned Bert Auburn or Brett Auburn?
Yes, Bert.
Bert Auburn. And
Early then, Bert.
Chip, there's two consistencies. Every time I've watched Texas, and I take that first regular season game away, and I haven't watched them as much as you, I know, and maybe others, but – every time I watch the game, Bert Auburn misses kicks that could help push the lead up, and then Sark goes and yours and this offense goes into this lull where they just look they don't look good at all. And you mentioned the fact that they've been able to overcome it against every team but Georgia, which is probably the most talented team they've played at this point. But I know you've asked the question: what is the answer, Ben? What's pinpointing on this? Like, what is the reason they do that?
Yeah, I mean, I've looked into it. It's different for almost every game. That's what's crazy. I mean, against A&M, they dominated the third quarter, had the ball for over 12 minutes, but Quinn Ewers threw a pick six and fumbled. And so they lost that quarter 7-0. They've had costly penalties in the third quarter. They've had the defense maybe couldn't get off the field against Arizona State because of a fake punt that Arizona State was able to convert. It's really strange how it's sort of, there's no common thread across the board. But there have been times where Quinn Ewers has, missed open people. There have been tough play calls by Steve Sarkisian getting away from the running game. So it's a combination of everything, but man, that is a pattern that absolutely needs to end at this point. You're down to the final four.
Chip, I want to ask you too about the matchup with the defensive line from Texas. And I think that, I think that a lot of people can say that Texas has the best defensive front in college football at times this year. I think people said that about Oregon as well. At times this year, I think people said that about Tennessee, at least around these parts. They'll face their toughest task probably this weekend, and that's no shade at Georgia's offensive line, but the running game from Ohio State seems to have hit another level this, these last couple of games. What's the outlook for them? Tell me about the personnel for Texas' defensive front and how you think they'll fare in the matchup.
Well, I think it's the biggest key to the game is getting pressure on Will Howard. And so, you know, Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinator, he's got guys who can do it. He's got, you know, Colin Simmons, the freshman who won the Sean Alexander Award over Jeremiah Smith. I'm not sure about that one, but, you know, Trey Moore, who's got a play behind the line of scrimmage in seven of his last eight games. Baron Sorrell, who leads the team in quarterback pressures, and Ethan Burke, who seems to make a big play every game. He blocked a field goal last week in the Peach Bowl. So they've got guys who can get after the quarterback. You know, Michigan played a light box. They played a six-man box, invited Ohio State to run, and they did. Kind of lured Ohio State into a trench war that Michigan was able to win. You know, does Texas try some of that? You're going to have some safety help over the top to deal with Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Egbuka. So, you know, they're good enough up front. Anthony Hill, they're all everything linebacker number zero, who's just lightning fast, great instincts, makes, you know, play after play after play. He's capable. I mean, he's the guy who spied Will Howard last year, and you know, that was against K-State. Ohio State's offensive line has been reshuffled. This is the one matchup I think Texas, you give them the check mark. Texas's defensive line against the Ohio State offensive line. So they've got a lot on their plate. And, you know, they just played 97 snaps against Arizona State. So you got to hope that they've been able to recover and then play the game of their lives Friday night.
We got Chip Brown on with us, insider for 247 Sports, covering the Texas Longhorns. Hey, Chip, so when you look at the ground game against Clemson, they had almost 300 rushing yards. Against Arizona State, 53. So how can they try to get some of that going for them against Ohio State?
Yeah, honestly, I think they didn't realize the fire and the fight that Arizona State was going to have. You know, they saw the smaller guys and thought, okay, we got this, and they didn't. You know, Arizona State, to their credit, you know, played like madmen and just fought and didn't make mistakes, and Texas did. I mean, there were times where guys were whiffing. And so, you know, that was, to me, the biggest storyline for the offensive line. I mean, they just didn't play the game that they were expected to play. And so, you know, you're going to have a five-alarm wake-up call here. I mean, if these guys aren't ready for this game, then it's a mystery, because they were totally ready for Clemson, totally ready for Texas A&M. That was a winner-take-all to go to the SEC championship game. They were playing at night at Kyle Field, and they dominated both lines of scrimmage. That's the kind of performance I would expect to see Friday night, because there's no tomorrow. So I did say last week, if there could possibly be a look-ahead game in the college football playoffs, it was probably Texas-Arizona State, and I think the Texas offensive line got caught looking ahead. And they got it right in the mouth.
All right, Chip, you know, Jahdae Barron, I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. He's a Jim Thorpe Award winner as the best DB in the country. What do you think, how are they going to use him? Because you mentioned the receivers that Ohio State has. It's not just Jeremiah Smith. All of a sudden, Chip Kelly figured out he was on the roster in the playoffs, apparently. But he's been on the roster all year. But they do have Ed Bouquet. They have a honestly, Ohio State's deep every year. What's Barron going to do? Is he going to go to Smith and maybe travel? I know they use him in that their star position or whatever. What's their plan with Barron?
Yeah, I mean, I would expect to see Barron travel with Jeremiah Smith. And what a matchup that would be. I mean, you got the Thorpe Award winner against arguably the best receiver, probably would be the number one draft pick if he came out after his freshman year. What a matchup. I hope that's what we get. Malik Muhammad, the other corner for Texas, is, you know, he's the guy who gets picked on because people don't throw at Jahdae Barron. So
You know, he's going to have to be super sharp. The safeties for Texas are outstanding, and that's going to be interesting. Can they get, you know, hits on these guys? Andrew Makuba is a head knocker. You know, he's had two different calls looked at for targeting that were not targeting. Michael Taft, everybody's talking about his non-targeting call. You know, Texas has safeties who will knock you out. And Jelani McDonald, number 25, is a guy who got 67 snaps in that Peach Bowl. Is kind of a guy moving up and into their star nickel role. He's another guy who can knock you out. So, you know, Texas is going to have to be super physical. They're going to have to hit these guys, you know, any way they can. And you know, they can't get caught like they did last year against Michael Penix. Penix put on a clinic in that CFP semifinal in the Sugar Bowl last year. It seemed like, you know, he couldn't miss. Roma Dunze and McMillan. So they know what it feels like, and they cannot let that happen again.
Finishing up here with Chip Brown, 247 Sports. Chip, look, let's look away from this game for a little bit. I got to ask you the question. Steve Sarkisian's name keeps popping up in some of these head coaching circles in the NFL. What do you make of it? Do you think in your time being around him that he's a guy that would jump to the NFL? Obviously, Atlanta Falcons fans over here, we know him really well. I think he'd be a decent NFL coach. What are your thoughts, and do you think he's actually given it any serious thought?
Well, the fact that you're saying that I think he'd be a decent head coach means he needs to stay right where he is, because not NFL is not for long for the players and not for long for the coaches. I mean, what good jobs are there where you have the kind of say and input and influence over the roster, over everything, like you do in college football? And it's to Sarkisian's credit that he's built it the way he has at Texas. He's got it rolling. You know, he has not taken a sideways step in terms of program momentum since that first season, that 5-7 season. Since then, he's been reeling in one top recruiting class after another. He's building it from the inside out. He's got excellent offensive linemen. He's got Arch Manning in the wings. He's got a loaded defensive, you know, tackle class coming in, led by Justice Terry from Georgia. And why on earth would you leave that for the uncertainty of the NFL? You get promised one thing as a head coach in the NFL, and then the next, you know, you're out the door, and you know, you think you have a franchise player, and the next year that guy wants to leave. You know, Tyreek Hill and Davante Adams. I mean, it's like, why would you go? In college football, the coach has all the power. I mean, the players have a lot more with the transfer portal and NIL, but in the NFL, you get on the wrong side of a star player who's under contract, the coach is out the door. So I think Sark is smart enough to know how good he has it right now. I think Jimmy Sexton's, you know, stirring the pot to help a client who's had a really good year.
Boom. There you have it. Well, Chip, thanks for joining us this morning. We always appreciate the insight. Good to have you back.
Hey, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That was Chip Brown. He is the Texas Longhorns insider for 247 Sports.
It's nice of him not to roast me on Jahdae Barron's name.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. I mean, I looked for enunciation. I couldn't find it.
Nice of us. And look, I respect everything he just said about Steve Sarkisian going to the NFL, but college football is the wild, wild west. So what do you get from an NFL job? You get not having to recruit your own players every other week.
And had he given us a little more time, I was going to ask him. I was going to say that.
Yeah. This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing up. Next, it's the Steakhouse here on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.